It's the Mornings with Ed show straight up at 8 o'clock, and welcome to the program. As you know, on Wednesdays, we need to sift through the economy. And, you know, it's a big muddled mess that I try and describe to you, but it seems to clear up when we have Laureen Gilbert. She's the founder and president of Wealthwise Financial Services. And Laureen comes on Wednesdays to help us sift through all of this information we've received. Laureen, thank you for being here today.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
How are you today?
Wonderful.
Good.
Another beautiful day in Laguna Beach.
Yes, it's going to be a nice, warm, almost perfect day out there. It seems like so much has happened in the 7 days since we last spoke, and it seems that every day something is huge. Where would you describe where we're at generally, economically?
Well, there's no doubt in my mind that we're in the middle of a recession. And a recession, the classic definition of a recession is 2 negative quarters of GDP, and we're right in the middle of it. If we look at the unemployment numbers that continue to surge, we saw the ADP numbers come out this morning, we know that the economy is hurting because our economy is definitely a consumer-based economy with over two-thirds of our GDP being driven by the consumer. So the consumer, many people are unemployed. We have over 30 million people now unemployed. And with that kind of unemployment number, that means a long road ahead to get our economy back to where it was. However, if we look at the markets have clearly been pricing in a V-shaped recovery. And so putting those two realities together is interesting because we've got a bifurcated market that's separated from the realities of what's going on in the economy. So it's very interesting time and probably hard for people to understand those two differences.
Right. And with me, for instance, as I see that the economy or the market is doing really well, is it kind of building itself up on a bubble and we should expect that bubble to explode at some point?
Well, I have not felt confident that this rally was a sustainable rally. However, the rally has continued to go on. So it has many of us in the investment industry shaking our heads going, how is the market getting so far ahead of itself when we're looking at Q2 numbers being much worse than Q1 numbers? And that's why I say the markets at this point are looking at a V shape. Now, what I think is going to happen, and of course, we never know what the market's going to do day by day. Long term, we know the markets will go up over time. But I think we will have another pullback. I don't know when it's going to be, but we would expect continued volatility. So what I would say to investors at this point is cautiously look. If you're at this point looking at putting cash in the markets, it's got to be a cautious entry into the markets. If you're already invested in the market, you know, that's good. You know, you've got your money in and the markets are doing well, as you said. But right now, the big question is, what do people do with cash? And what we're doing is we're looking at cautiously and placing those dollars very cautiously into the equity markets and balancing that out, of course, with fixed income.
Okay, and that's a smart move. I would think that makes total sense to me. What are you expecting in Friday's job report? We already have 30 million unemployed. What kind of number are we expecting this coming Friday?
Well, I think the trend will continue from what we've seen, which is large numbers, but those numbers are decreasing every time. Okay. So I think we'll see that same pattern continuing, and that is good news. So as bad as those numbers look, it is good news that it's somewhat slowing down.
Right.
When we look at if we look at the breakdown, for instance, of what we've been seeing, right now we're seeing the unemployment numbers with very large companies being greater than some of the mid and small companies. So it looks like at the beginning, some of the small companies reacted very quickly. They had to.
Right.
In other words, they had to just try and survive.
Right.
And now some of the larger companies are starting to fall suit. You saw Uber's numbers come out with their layoff predictions in there, like 3,700 people and their CEO who's not going to take a base salary for the rest of the year. So you'll see more of that.
Okay. All right. And with food processing plants, last week the Department of Agriculture says that meat production was down 35% from what it was last year. Should we expect a substantial rise in meat prices or even a delay in the chain that would cause that spike in meat prices?
Yeah, it's interesting. So, right, pork is down 25% and meat or beef 10%. Wendy's doesn't have burgers, hamburgers right now. So there's definitely a shortage in the whole meat supply chain. And, of course, that has to do with plant closures of some of the largest, whether it's Tyson's or Smithfield or, a number of companies have had issues with the coronavirus. So specifically in the area of meat prices, yes, I think meat prices will definitely go up. I wouldn't say that's going to come across the entire food supply chain, but for meat, I think you can't expect higher prices. And what's interesting is Beyond Meat's earnings just came out, and of course that's plant-based, right. And they are in some of the large McDonald's, Del Taco, some of those fast food places. We're seeing a surge in interest in plant-based foods, and so and they swung from negative earnings to squeaking out positive earnings. So I think you're going to see more plant-based foods coming out.
Right. And I got to be honest with you. I have a vegan at home that I feed on a regular basis, and we do a lot of plant-based foods, and they are quite delicious. They really are. They're as good as advertised. I'm glad to see that they're going to be doing better. The bankruptcies of Hertz, Norwegian Cruise Lines, and Gold's Gym. Mm-hmm. There are other companies that are going bankrupt. J. Crew, for instance, just filed for bankruptcy. But we're not going to lose these companies. Are they just reorganizing, or are we going to see them gone forever?
I think it depends on the company, and to your point, Neiman Marcus, reorganizing. So there's going to be a lot of reorganizing. Norwegian actually said they just don't know how they can survive at this point. The problem is with some in the travel industry, to get people comfortable again to get on a cruise liner is going to take a very long time. So there are some companies that I don't know if they will survive this. Other companies where, they like Neiman Marcus or J. Crew, some of the retailers that can probably come out of it with some reorganization. And of course, shifting, and those companies have been shifting towards online sales. But so I think there will be, once again, just like anything, there'll be winners and losers. There will be people who will make it and won't make it. But I do think, especially when it comes to the travel industry, there are some that just won't be able to make it in the new kind of the new world order that emerges out of the coronavirus.
Right. And when you say that there will be winners and losers, is a lot of that going to be big companies? Yes, you're going to be the winner, but the mom and pop store that files for bankruptcy, for instance, won't be allowed to or won't be able to reorganize in the same way?
Well, it's interesting. I was just on the phone with Nancy Pelosi yesterday. She addressed the Small Business Roundtable that I'm a part of, and she was talking about all the efforts that Congress is enacting as another round of stimulus. So we've been hearing about what is going to be done next for small business owners, and there are going to be changes to the PPP program. So I think that's going to help small businesses a lot. I think they're going to change that 25% only 25% of that PPP could be spent on non-payroll items, and it was very limited. Right. I think they're going to change that. I think they're also going to look at more of it probably just being forgiven than any kind of loan. I think they're looking at more things that can be done for small business. So certainly small business continues to hurt. 30 million small business owners in the United States employing 59 million people, and that is a huge part of our economy. So definitely small businesses have to be addressed. But, large and small have hurt across the board. And that's where we've seen not only with the PPP addressing the small business owner, but Main Street Lending also addressing the mid-size and larger companies. So there certainly is help across the board. You've seen what's been going on to help airlines. So many parts of our economy are going to hurt for a long time.
Did she give you kind of a time frame as to when this additional help might come?
Oh, it's going to be soon. Okay. They're in negotiations. Also heard Kudlow talking about looking at full expensing this year for businesses, which would be a tremendous boost to business owners, and changing the meal and entertainment expense right now. That's a 50% deduction. If they made that 100% deduction, that would help restaurants.
Yes.
Because then you'd have business owners also feeling comfortable. Okay, we could go to a restaurant and we're going to get 100% expensing instead of 50%. So they're looking, whether it's the White House or Congress, both of them, they're in negotiations right now trying to come up with the next stimulus package that should come out very shortly.
Okay. They're having to get creative. You mentioned the Fed recently having expanded the Main Street Lending Program to welcome larger companies and certainly companies with more leverage. Now, under a new loan option, these companies can borrow up to $25 million if their total debt doesn't exceed 6 times the borrower's income. Now, likewise, the Fed has promised to set up a vehicle that will not just buy strong investment grade rated debt, but junk bonds too. Explain to us what a junk bond is.
Sure. So bonds are rated. Most bonds are rated. Okay. And they're rated on a scale of being, you know, an A-rated bond or a B-rated bond. And, you know, A is higher quality than B. And so there's a level that's considered junk, which are your lower-rated bonds plus your unrated bonds. Both fall into that category, your lower-rated bonds and your non-rated bonds. So there has been a lot of attention placed on what we call high-yield bonds, which are junk bonds, and that is that the Fed might, they haven't done anything yet,
right. But
they've talked about potentially buying some index of the high-yield bond market that would provide support for that market. They've talked about that. They've talked about potentially buying what would be considered or helping what might be considered a junk bond today that wasn't prior to the coronavirus.
Right.
So we'll see what they end up doing, but they haven't done it yet. They've alluded to that they have the ability and they might do that.
And simply by talking about it, they don't even have to do it, but simply by talking about it, that's given confidence to the market, hasn't it?
It has. We've seen a rally in the high yield space, not back to the levels where they were before, but they had immediately been hit tremendously, and now we've seen a rally in that space. So that's an area. Another area, the high yield space, by the way, acts and reacts much like the equity markets do. So investors need to understand that. While you get a higher yield because you're taking on more risk,
right,
higher yields means, you know, also more risk. You also have volatility, much like the stock market. So when the markets go down, the high yield index also goes down.
Right now, it goes up.
So,
right.
Mm-hmm.
Right now, gamblers across the country are absolutely getting this because that's what it is. It's really gambling.
Well, I wouldn't call it gambling. I don't call the stock market gambling. I know some people think it looks like gambling.
It really does.
But you are investing in companies, and you're investing in the future prospects of those companies, whether it's on the debt side to be paid on the money that you're lending the companies, which is what a bond is, or the taking on the profits of a company, which was what a stock is. And I think where things get confusing is when people don't really see what they're investing in. If they don't see the companies that they're investing in today's world, so much is in packaged products, whether it's a mutual fund or an ETF, where you don't see those individual holdings per se. And then investors go, you know, what is really happening? So to get an idea of what is going on, look at specific companies. You know, right now we're focused, our focus is on high quality. So your large companies, we're looking at large companies, high quality companies, whether it's on the equity side or the fixed income. But I'll also say another area, and I don't know how much we've talked about this before, but we see opportunities in the municipal bond market as a more conservative area to be invested in, and an area that got hit as well. But we think that that's a temporary adjustment in the municipal bond markets.
Okay. So again, you're not steering anyone in any particular direction, but municipal bonds don't look bad right now. Not as bad as they would seem.
Yeah, right. I mean, obviously people have to talk about their risk tolerance and what their goals are and et cetera. But when we're talking in broad scope, we use the municipal bond market as a way for investors to put some money that maybe they don't need immediately. But if they needed to get access to it, it's there as a backup to, let's say, their emergency savings.
Okay.
So everybody needs to have their emergency savings. This is we certainly learned that in this recessionary period, that no job is guaranteed, and we're seeing, you know, unemployment numbers like we've never seen before, and that's why everybody needs to have that 3 to 6 month emergency savings account. And then after that, having another backup to that emergency savings account, and a good one to think about might be having a municipal bond account. The way we do it is we hold those municipal bonds as individual bonds versus looking at a mutual fund per se as that part of your allocation. And then your other money that you invest for retirement or longer term.
Okay. All right. Last week when you and I spoke, you had mentioned you had a little concern about the Fed buying up so much debt. And the Federal Reserve Act prohibits the Fed from buying corporate assets, and they somehow got around that problem. They set up a vehicle managed by BlackRock to do the buying. How does that work?
I really don't know. I'm going to just tell you, I'm not really sure how that. I think because this is a new territory that they've been exploring, and I'll do a little research on that for you, Ed, this week, and then come back next week and give some more insight on that. But my concern is that the Fed is increasing the debt, and every American should be concerned about that. And what we need to do is, when we come out of this, we've got to look at strategic ways of reducing that Fed balance sheet and unwinding the debt that we're in, because we're really sacrificing the future of our country, children and grandchildren's future for our country, if we are burdened with debt. Just like a household that is burdened with debt and cannot get ahead, that is where we are going to be if we don't start unwinding the debt that we hold.
I had mentioned a couple of days ago that I think we've pretty much resigned ourselves to being a nation that will forever be in debt. And that's that can't be. It seems that that's it, that we've passed along our debt to our grandchildren at this point.
Well, some debt is not bad. You know, it's not just like in a household. Once again, right. It's not, you know, there's some... You know, people have debt on their home mortgage. As long as they're not overextended and they can pay that debt and it's in line with, you know, their income, the same holds true for our government. You know, some debt is not a bad thing, but being over indebted and having payments that are going to have to be made. And don't forget, when interest rates go up, that means that hurts our government as well. The government has to pay on debt based on interest rates. So, you know, that's a longer term issue as well.
Right. Right. And as a nation, and do you think we're right now experiencing two different realities? Because as with the exception of the tri-state area, as the numbers continue to rise, the death rate rises, the infection rate rises all across the country. Most states, there's 33 states that are opening this week. Have we decided that after just 60 or 70 days that the economy and the health and safety come with divergent goals? Can we not have both?
Well, I would say that the last, the last couple of months, safety and health took a priority over the economy completely.
Yes.
I mean, we literally shut down our entire economy for the sake of people's health. Now we have to get to balancing it out. And what we've seen and the data shows is the numbers are actually, they've been quite low, which is great news, much lower than it could have been, much, much lower than it would have been had we not taken those actions. And viruses like this one will die off. Now, we know it might come, you know, very likely come back. And what we really need for everyone's peace of mind is a vaccine. That's when people will feel comfortable, you know, traveling and doing all the things that we used to do, going to a gym and all those kinds of things. And until then, we're now getting to the point where people need to make personal choices, and we can't have the government make those choices for us as individuals. So I agree with the opening up. Even our own Governor Newsom has, you know, moved us to the, you know, we're moving to the next phase on Friday. So I think states realize that we've, you know, it's now time to balance things out, and the numbers and the data are showing more positive signs. Now, I think it'll be a long time before, you know, I don't know about you, Ed, but I'm not going to New York City anytime soon. And I was going every quarter. You know, I usually go to New York City every quarter and go to do the media. But it'll be a while before I go to New York again, because their numbers are, you know, have been, you know, that area has been hit so hard.
Right. Well, before this even happened, I wouldn't even get on an airplane because of that same. I'm a germaphobe to begin with. So somebody sneezes on an airplane, my trip is over. I'm done. And
wow.
So there's my problem. I drive everywhere. A couple of weeks ago, you told us that you had taken a test to find out if you were positive for COVID-19 back in January. I remember you being pretty sick back toward the end of the year, end of last year, beginning of this year. What was the result?
Oh, thanks for asking. You know, it was negative, and I was shocked. I was convinced that I had the coronavirus. However, I will say that one of my dear friends, who is a doctor, who did visit me in the hospital when I was hospitalized at home, she is still convinced. I told her, I'm like, I can't believe that my test was negative for the antibodies. And she is a doctor in the midst of coronavirus right now and sees patients all the time. And she is not convinced that that's true. She said even the best coronavirus test that they have has a 15% error rate, and that the antibody test in the same way is not all that accurate. So even though I did the blood test, the vial test, that's supposed to be more accurate than the other test, she is not convinced. And she is convinced that indeed I did have the coronavirus because of all of my symptoms and the severity, and of course that my lungs have been damaged, et cetera. So who knows?
Right.
But that test did come out negative.
Okay. Well, did you feel as sick as you'd ever felt with the flu?
It's the sickest I've ever been in my life,
ever
want to be. I mean, and of course, that is also why I have been so cautious and why I understand how important it has been for us to close the economy and do the social distancing and all of those things. When you have been impacted in that way, or one of your loved ones, somebody close to you, you understand how serious this is. So I know that there are still people out there that don't understand why, you know, why have we had to do this? There are very good reasons why this virus is is significant, very severe. And that's why I say now, as things open, people are going to need to make personal decisions. And even offices, you know, those are going to be tough decisions to make on, you know, when do you bring everybody in? Are we able to keep the distancing? You know, all of those things have to be considered.
Now, your office filled with people, business will be done differently within the office, I imagine, when you do go back, right?
Well, thankfully, the way that my office is set up, it's already set up with 6 feet apart. We have, we're very fortunate in that way that the way that our office is configured, we do have the space necessary. I have told my team that for them, it's a personal decision. I don't want any of them to feel that they're being put in a situation where they're not safe. We're doing very well with people working remotely, and we have one person who's going to the office. So we're going to have those conversations, but I don't want anybody to feel that they're at risk.
Well, that's very cool. What a cool boss to work for. Laureen Gilbert, founder and president of Wealthwise Financial Services. They are in Irvine. What's your web address in case people want to find you?
It is wealthwisefinancial.com, and our number is 949-748-1177.
Thank you, Laureen. And we are looking forward to seeing you back next week, because I'm sure between now and then there will be so many more things to talk about.
Absolutely. Thank you, Ed. Have a great day.
Thank you. Laureen Gilbert, Wealthwise Financial. It's the Mornings with Ed show, 8:28 the time.